Three Northern Territory child protection workers have been stood down over the case of 5-year-old Kumanjai little baby. Her body was found near Old Timers Town Camp in Alice Springs last week before 47-year-old Jefferson Lewis was charged with murder. Child Protection Minister Robin Cahill says she ordered a full brief after being told there were no concerns. The government says legal restrictions prevent it from releasing further details about the department's involvement. Police have recovered the body of a man after a car plunged into a weir south of Sydney on Wednesday morning. The 20-year-old was a passenger in an Audi that had been travelling on the road through the Royal National Park before it plunged into the water. The driver of that car has now been charged with dangerous driving. An 18-year-old driver of a Mercedes that police say was near the Audi before it veered off the road has also been charged. A rally orchestrated by prominent neo-Nazis outside the gates of a state parliament has resulted in a hate speech arrest nearly 6 months later. New South Wales police say they've taken a 32-year-old man into custody, charging him with publicly inciting hatred on the grounds of race after an investigation by security police and counter-terrorism specialists. A group of 60 black-clad demonstrators were allowed to assemble outside the state parliament and yell Hitler Youth chants on November 8 last year. The group claims to have disbanded since January when the federal government launched a hate speech crackdown following the Bondi terrorist attack. A Greens-led inquiry is due to release its final report on Thursday, with Labor and Coalition members expected to oppose a recommendation for a 25% levy on gas exports. A campaign led by Independent Senator David Pocock and the Australia Institute to introduce the 25% tax has gained widespread community support in recent months. The Senator and Greens Party say the money could help households shift to cleaner energy, while the gas industry says it already pays about $22 billion a year in taxes and royalties. The Prime Minister has already ruled out a tax on existing contracts, arguing that Australia must protect its reputation as a reliable gas supplier to Asian trading partners.
Our gas exports are directly linked to our national fuel security. And the middle of a global fuel crisis is the worst possible time to jeopardise these relationships or the investment that underpins them. That is why I can confirm that the budget will not undermine existing contracts on gas exports.
Soft plastics recycling collection points are returning to Woolworths stores more than 3 years after the Australia-wide Red Cycle supermarket scheme collapsed. Woolworths say more than 700 of its stores across 5 states will accept chip packets, lolly wrappers and similar packaging. The supermarket giant started a trial of the new scheme in 5 Victorian Woolworths in February 2024, and several stores in South Australia were the latest to join this week. Woolworths says its renewed recycling program has collected and processed about 400 million pieces of soft plastic, or 310,000 kilos, since that year. The Australian government is being urged to take a positive lead in the funding of gender equality projects as global foreign aid dries up. Just 2.3% of total global foreign aid is spent on ensuring women's access to healthcare, education, nutrition, sanitation, shelter, safety and rights, according to new research released by the Lowry Institute. More than half of that is expected to disappear in cuts to foreign aid budgets globally. United Nations Population Fund Executive Director Deanne Keeter says Australia remains one of the few countries that has not cut its commitments to gender equality projects. The High Court has cleared the way for Australia to keep deporting some non-citizens to Australia's offshore immigration detention facility on Nauru. The court has rejected a challenge from the Iranian man known as TCXM, who had argued he could face serious harm there because of poor medical care. The ruling relates to a new deal allowing Australia to send some people to Nauru if they have no legal right to stay here but cannot return to their home country. 8 people have already been sent to Nauru under the arrangement. 3 people have been evacuated from the cruise ship at the centre of a deadly hantavirus outbreak, have arrived in the Netherlands for special treatment. The passengers, who are Dutch, German and British, had been flown from Cape Verde after 2 developed acute symptoms on board a luxury expedition ship travelling from southern Argentina through to Antarctica and to the remote Atlantic Islands. The vessel is now sailing to Spain's Canary Islands after intervention from the World Health Organization. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says health authorities are continuing to closely monitor the situation.
3 suspected hantavirus case patients have just been evacuated from the ship and are on their way to receive medical care in the Netherlands in coordination with the WHO. WHO continues to work with the ship's operators to closely monitor the health of passengers and crew, working with authorities to support appropriate medical follow-up and evacuation where needed. At this stage, the overall public health risk remains low.
Foreign Minister Penny Wong has downplayed concerns of pushback from China over a proposed security pact between Australia and Fiji. Senator Wong has held talks with Fiji Prime Minister Sitiveni Rabuka in the Pacific Island nation's capital, Suva, as they spruik the yet-to-be-signed Vuvale agreement between the two countries. Australia's bid for a $500 million deal with Vanuatu was shelved, and Vanuatu is in ongoing discussions over a similar deal with Beijing and has received millions of dollars for infrastructure works from China. Senator Wong says everything they have been doing in Fiji has been in the best interests of Australia.
Australians understand and can see the challenges that our external environment places upon us, and what the government has been very focused on is ensuring that we work to assure Australia's interests and security in these times.
And now in sports, New South Wales has named Rima Butler to make her state of origin debut in Game 2 against Queensland next Thursday. The Sydney Roosters prop comes into the side after Tiana Panitani-Grey was ruled out with a knee injury. Veteran Kezzy Apps moves into the starting team as the Blues look to clinch the next series in Brisbane. Queensland winger Phoenix Rain Hippie is also being sidelined with an injury to the hamstring. And now for a look at today in the weather. Perth is sunny at 23, Broome is sunny at 33, Darwin is sunny at 33, Alice Springs is seeing cloud clearing at 20, Cairns is partly cloudy at 29, Brisbane partly cloudy at 27, Sydney is seeing some clouds at 19, and Canberra is partly cloudy at 12. Melbourne is seeing some rain at 14, and Hobart is also raining at 13, and Adelaide is cloudy at 17. And that wraps up the latest in news, sport and weather. You're listening to NITV Radio. Confined 17. 424 Indigenous Australian artists with lived experience of incarceration in Victoria are now presenting their artworks on display at the Torches Confined 17 art exhibition. The Confined series of annual exhibitions started back in 2009, and now it's in its 17th year. The immersive and eclectic collection of works captures the artist's own personal cultural connections and stories through art. Nearly 500 pieces of art on display at this year's Confined 17 exhibition. 100% of the artwork sale price goes directly to the artists. The exhibition is now on at the Glen Eira City Council Gallery in Melbourne and is opened from last Thursday, the 30th of April, and is now on show till the 14th of June 2026. And you can visit and view the collection, the works, online too. NITV Radio's Kerry Lee Barry went along to opening night of Confined 17 and had a yarn with a bunch of the people there, including Susanna, the CEO, one of the artists, Tupin Walchignetti, and Kent Morris. Have a listen to these chats that she had at Confined 17.
We're very lucky to be here tonight at the Confined 17 exhibition launch, and I'm joined by the CEO, Susanna, of The Torch. Welcome to NITV Radio. What a beautiful space I'm in right now. How good is this?
Thank you so much. It's the most colourful Confined we've ever put on, the 17th on Bunurong country. And yeah, we're really, really proud of the 501 artworks.
For those people who don't know, what is the Torch Project and how does the Torch come to be this, which is such magnificent, vibrant, bright, moving art in a gallery space in Caulfield?
Thank you. The Torch is a 15-year-old organisation that works with First Peoples who are incarcerated all across Victoria. So we work across the 17 prisons and we support artists in prison to connect to culture and find a new pathway beyond the prison system. We're working against the systemic oppression of incarceration and the hyper-incarceration of mob in this country. And we try and give artists an opportunity through economic justice to earn an income whilst they're inside. So every artist gets 100% of the sale price of the artwork. And we're hoping that most artists might come out of the prison system with a little bit of earned income to start a new life and see hope and have a better feeling of pride and self-confidence to take a new path beyond prison.
I think you've gotten a pretty incredible job. What do you love most about working for The Torch in your role?
I love seeing a community organisation that is working well. We have a program that actually works. It's Aboriginal led. We're over 50% Aboriginal board, over 50% Aboriginal staff, and we know what we're doing works. So we know the reincarceration rates of artists connected to The Torch is about 20% compared to the national average, which is 55 to 65%. So we know that if you actually put change in the hands of Aboriginal people and get them to design a program, this is the results that you get, something that is vibrant, that unifies our community, where allies and mob come out to buy people's work, and our artists are so proud, and they have dignity, and they are better mums, and they are better dads, and they are better grandparents, and better kids for it. And yeah, we're really, really proud of what we've created.
And for those who may not be able to make it to see the exhibition here in the gallery space, how can they get online and have a look at the artworks, maybe have a think about purchasing a piece of beautiful art that we're seeing here tonight?
We are so lucky to have extraordinary supporters from all across Australia. You are welcome to buy art from our website. So we're here the 30th of April. So all artworks are available at www.thetorch.org.au. So it doesn't matter that you can't get down here. Artworks can be bought online and we will do the red dotting for you. And then we will send it out to you, or you can click and collect from our office for free.
Thank you so much for your time today on NITV Radio. And thanks for having me. This is incredible. Thank you, Susanna.
Having you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Right here on NITV Radio, we're at the Confined 17 exhibition tonight. at the Glen Ira City Council Gallery, and I'd like to welcome our next guest, the artist of this incredible painting that Benson, the chair of the Torch Project, and I were just yarning about, and I'm really blessed to be joined by the artist. G'day, Bruz. What's your name? Who's your mob? Where are you from?
My name is Tupin Walter Tineri, my artist name. It's Tupin as Kugabrak. I say Kugabrak, but we're more commonly known as the Nurrungeti. But Tupin means to hold, you know, hold closely and to protect. And Walter Tineri is a corruption of my family clan of Watal Tineri. Born in South Australia, raised in the Riverland, and until maybe about the age of 14, grew up in Mildura. And yeah, apparently I paint now.
My brother, this is a beautiful piece of art. Tell me about it.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm still sort of amazed by it myself, to be honest. I don't get to see it too often, out of the pocket and hung up. You know, I stare at it on my phone a lot, I'll be honest there. And I guess before I go into the painting, I'll just talk about where I was mentally at the time of painting this in November last year. I was in such a slump, like I wasn't painting, I just wasn't travelling too well mentally. And so I did a few small ones just to get myself moving. And then I got, you know, and they were like two or three colours throughout. And then I got the motivation to jump onto this, which is a monster, you know, 118 by 200 centimetres. And, yeah, and incredibly knocked it over in 5 days, which is ridiculous. But
so how did you get from that early process? You're explaining you were working on smaller pieces and then you worked on this. How were you mentally by the time you hit the canvas with the paints on this one, bro?
Well, it's kind of funny because it's such a big canvas and I'm in a small apartment. So it was really rolling. I mean, I tried to do like the old aunties will sit on the ground and paint, and I lasted about 20 minutes. And then I had to set up on a table and unroll third by third. And to be honest, I got halfway through. Like, I really was moving along, and I got halfway through, and the story sort of emerged from it, which is just around, like, longing for healing, you know, and that's really what it was, the entire process. You know, as you can see, it's like you can feel the vibrations and whatnot. You know, there's a lot of movement in it. And I'd like to think that was coming from within. You know, that's absolutely connected to it.
And there's some really beautiful, intricate line work I'm seeing here. What's that like to do? Is that hard to do, bro, on a canvas?
It can be. I've sort of moved across from what I was doing originally and getting a bit more intensive with my line work now. I guess for me, the easiest part, apart from the fact that there's been so much repetition over so many months, is that I try to set the canvas up in a way where I can just get nice, smooth, you know, smooth lines where I'm not having to stop and start and dry paint and whatnot. I didn't do myself any favours on this one, though, because there's so many spots where I run myself into a corner, but it's still, I think just after a couple of years of doing nothing but line work, it's just become second nature.
Thanks so much for your time today on NITV Radio. It's been an absolute pleasure to be here in this gallery amongst such beautiful artwork. Congratulations on the exhibition and your amazing piece of art. May you keep up the amazing work. Thanks, bro.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Here tonight at the Confined 17 exhibition opening. We're in the front of the gallery. What's going on here, Kent Morris?
Well, Kerry Lee, we have the Welcome to Country by Auntie Uncle Willie Pepper, and now we have the Bladjik Mob. So these are fellas that have come through the Torch program, they've come through the in-prison program, in the inter-community program, and then they're dancing up and sharing their stories. And not looking for some of them, it's the first time that they have done this kind of cultural practice.
You've been with Torch for many years now. What's your title now, bro? Creative director?
Oh, it's pretty fancy now. I'm the program founder and creative director. So it's 15 years nearly. And it's not saying it's gone quick, but to be here at Confined 17 with 424 artists, 501 artworks, and seeing how many lives are being changed through a program that they built with the Torch, all of our mob, it just proves that we know how to look after our mob better than anybody else.
But you're also an acclaimed artist yourself in your own right, Kent. So it must be really fabulous to work with your fellow artists and for you to really understand the process and what these people are going through as artists.
Yeah, no, it is. And they're a real unique mob of artists, you know. And when I started back in the day, it was me going out and about. We've got 27 staff now and a whole team of First Peoples Arts Mentors. Many of you have come through the program who are delivering that program. I get to kind of culturally oversee and provide all my knowledge and experience as we do as we gain and learn that knowledge and experience and all that knowledge that was handed down to me by our elders about how to get myself right and how to connect with my culture and how what that might do. And that's what the program is all about, you know, that connection to who we are, which has often been taken away or fragmented or, you know, really severely impacted by colonisation. But here in this program, this is cultural space where people can reconnect or connect back to what they had or didn't have or might have lost along the way and share their stories with the broader community and prove once and for all that we know how to close the gap. We can close our own gap if we're just invested in and supported enough with the programs that we make, like the Torch program.
There's a lot of people here tonight from the Indigenous community as well as the non-Indigenous community. Why is it so important to get the wider community's support, not only with this event tonight for opening night, but to, you know, really get involved with Torch and support the artists long term? How important is that?
Yeah, it's really critically important, and it's a 10-year anniversary of the Aboriginal Arts Policy that we changed in Victoria after 40 years of advocacy from our mob, and we were able to change it because of this program, but also because we were able to get bipartisan support in the parliament. So we have to work together, mob and non-mob. We've got to do it together. We're not going to be able to do it separately, and we have to unite and connect each other. We've got enough of this divisiveness going on. So I think everybody wants a solution. Everyone wants to see those gaps closed, and particularly around our incarceration. But there just needs to be better leadership at the government level to say, hey, look at this Torch program built by mob for mob. That's working. We have like a 25-ish percent recidivism or return to prison rate. It's well below half. It's almost a third of what might happen without this program. And it's life-changing. We built it. We run it. And we run it in a way that brings people along with that journey. So it's very much an almost like an ideal model of reconciliation, if you think about it, that we drive it. But drive it in a way that brings everybody along with us, as we do in our communities, so no one gets left behind, you know?
Thanks so much for your time tonight here at the opening. I know you're a very busy man, so thanks so much for taking the time just to have a yarn with us about the importance of the Torch and what's on offer this year for Confined 17. Final words from you about the exhibition, please, Ken?
Yeah, get down here. Get down here physically or online, because seriously, every painting, every weaving, every cultural object that gets sold or licensed, you are physically and personally supporting closing the gap. You are doing it. You're not waiting for anyone else to do it. You're getting actually involved, and you can take that power to support this process.
Thanks for having me tonight. I'm very blessed to be here.
So good are yours.
How lucky am I?
Yeah.
Catch you next time.
All right. Catch you soon, eh?
Yama, I'm Nari Pakai. You're listening to NITV Radio. Joining us today is Alara Briggs Patterson, Yirrumboi Platform's expressions of culture, identity, and a range of all kinds of art forms. 2027, Yirrumboi will see the work from Alara with an album that is co-written and composed with Dr. Lou Bennett AM. To tell us more about this, we're joined by Alara. Thanks for jumping on today.
Hey, Nari. Thank you for having me. So happy to be here.
Can you give a little introduction into who you are? Who are you? Who's your mob? Where are you from?
I'm called Alara, which is my artist name and my regular name. And I am Yorta Yorta. I grew up on Jarraja in Bendigo and have been living in Nam for about 15 years. And yeah, just feeling really excited about sharing some information about our upcoming album.
Can you tell us about this album? You are a co-writer and it's a celebration of language. Can you tell us, what is this? What are you making?
Yes, this is massive. The album is titled Gambinan, which means rising in Yorta Yorta. And it's essentially about, a collaboration with my auntie, Dr. Lou Bennett AM, and it's about our people, it's about our culture, our country, and our languages rising. Yeah, I'm sure as many people listening, many black fellas listening, a lot of us don't get to grow up speaking our language, and so I've been working really hard with Jecha to work on my language skills and work on my songwriting and production skills to be able to create this album. It's a 7-track album and it has Yorta Yorta throughout the whole entire album. there's only two words in the whole about 45 minutes of music that are in English. And so, yeah, we're really, really excited to share this work because it's going to help the elevation and the expression and the connection that we have as Yorta Yorta people, but also as First Nations people around the country. And, yeah, bringing in that feeling of belonging and connection and bringing our stories to the surface.
That must be a really transformative process to get into language like that. What was it like to develop an album in language completely and doing that with your auntie?
That's a great question. I feel like it's important to share some context around like how we came to be doing this. It started with I was just in COVID like writing grants and, yeah, there was an opportunity to write a grant for an hour of new music. And I thought I'd really, really been wanting to expand my ability to speak Yorta Yorta. And so I pitched a live performance that would also include other Yorta Yorta song women like Lily Walker, Maddie Walker, and be able to sing together and create together. But because of COVID and things like didn't get better like we thought they might, the project ended up getting postponed like three times. And then we decided that we, Jetra and I, would actually just focus on writing and recording instead of doing like this live performance. So it's been about 5 years in the making, almost 6 years in the making now. And it started with like a development on country. So we went out to stay at Morning Glory, just in outside of Moama, and sat by the river and recorded country and listened to country. And I sat and listened to the stories that Aunty Lou had to share about our people and about our land and, talking about language a lot and the way we kind of use language. And, she's an academic as well. So Aunty Lou has so much knowledge and has listened to so many of our old people that have been recorded throughout the last 100 years. 150 years. So she's just amazing to work with. And obviously, she's a prolific song woman, Jaraja, from Jaraja on country and as a Yorta Yorta woman as well. So she is amazing. And we came together and just started creating. And we started talking about some of the songs that we wanted to share and the stories that we wanted to put into the album. There's a really kind of equal mix of like contemporary stories, so things that we've written about the way that we're kind of perceiving the world and relating to the world around us, but then also a couple of very old stories are in there as well. One first contact story about a young woman seeing a white man with a gun for the first time, so that's kind of intense. And the music kind of represents that as well, but, it's got all the sounds of country and all the sounds that we imagined that we might have heard or what it would have felt like to be this young woman, this young girl, Anyana Ngitika. Another couple of older stories. And then, we had the privilege to record with the Melbourne Chamber Orchestra on two of the songs as well. One of them was composed by Aunty Lou, and we had it transcribed by Erki Veltain. And he's a prolific string arranger and MD as well. And he was just absolutely beautiful what he brought to that song. And then we recorded that as a part of this album. And we had kind of co-written the language for a previous work the year before that I sang on as well with Aunty Lou. So, it's massive and it's kind of inspired by lots of different places, but it's all Gambinan, like it's all rising. It's language, it's water, it's culture. And we're so excited to share it. We've been working on it for so long and we're really, really proud of the work that we've created. But, in saying that, the commission with Yirrumboy is actually supporting the development of the premiere performance, which will happen during Yirrumboy in May next year, 2027. So, the next kind of in the next 12 months, we're kind of going deep into working out and understanding how we translate the studio recorded album into a live performance with live musicians, with other Yorta Yorta vocalists, with live drummers and keys and trumpet and hopefully strings if we can get enough money through the door. So yeah, really, really, really excited.
This album, it features layers of like cultural practices and activism. How do you hope that your music, this album, connects with listeners who will come to enjoy it either through listening to the album or being able to finally see the live performances when it comes to Yirrumboy?
I think it's going to be a really pivotal moment in history, honestly. Like I've never heard this amount of languages from Victoria presented in a contemporary manner on a record like what we're doing. So, you know, like definitely artists are starting to do that now. Like you can hear so much beautiful language with Bumpy singing in her debut album, Kanana. And yeah, there's definitely a few. Alice Skye has been working deeply with Wakaya language as well. But yeah, this will be a really pivotal moment for Victorian Aboriginal people because we haven't seen something like this from our languages down here, so heavily impacted by colonisation. And yeah, I hope that what people kind of experience is just a deep sense of pride and excitement, and that, you know, the outcomes might be that there more resourcing and more funding and more support are put behind musicians, just behind song people that are working, especially in languages, in our traditional languages, because it's so important with our culture being so deeply embedded within our language that, yeah, I feel like if we're able to go deep with learning our languages and bringing that back up to be an everyday process that we're speaking languages every day, then I feel like that will bring a lot of healing and connection and cultural pride to our people and to it has to me and to my family. And I feel really strong in my spirit and really connected to country and yeah. And also other mob when I can, yeah, manage to find the space to speak and write in language.
There are 7 songs in this album, and I know that we can't get into all of them, but of the songs, are like you really excited to develop the performance for? What are you hoping to see? What's the vision?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. We are collaborating with the other musicians and songwriters right from the start. But ultimately we hope to see all of the cast being able to sing in language. We hope to include visuals of country and, yeah, I guess like a whole body kind of experience of each of the songs. I can't say which of the songs I'm most excited about because I just absolutely love them all. And they're all like very different as well, but there's the threads that connect them all.
For the songs that are on the album, you have a lot of feelings and messages coming through. What do you hope that people connect with?
I hope people connect with our language, you know, that they start being able to recognize the words. I've been singing in language a little bit as I've been slowly kind of working my way up to learning all the songs, because studio recording is one thing, and then, you know, singing in front of an audience from memory is another. But yeah, I just hope that our language starts being spoken more and that the audience can feel the story without having to have it translated, because it won't necessarily be translated. We'll have access there, like there'll be an Auslan interpreter and we'll be doing other kinds of access stuff as well. But yeah, ultimately I hope that the album and the songs and the sound bring people back to country, bring people back to ourselves, and that people feel that sense of belonging and pride from where we come from here. on their lands, you know, on your, from Yorta country, from Wurundjeri country, you know, wherever people are. I just hope that they feel more connected to the lands that, that they're living on, that are kind of sustaining them and loving them. I want to shout out, obviously, Ani Lu, Jetjalu, because, yeah, we've co-created this album together. But the album does also include some of our friends. Basil Byrne recorded trumpet, Phoebe Ellsworth recorded piano, James Seymour, studio legend. Who else is on here? Yeah, the Melbourne Chamber Orchestra, Eki. We have Mari Ellis record some drums on here. Our beautiful friend Craig Pilkington is, you know, moments away from finishing the masters. So, yeah, my cousin, our cousin Corey Thorpe will be doing the artwork. And, yeah, and just the biggest love to Binnenberg, the production company that Ani Lu and Jetja Remain have started. If you can, yeah, check them out, Binnenberg, Binnenberg.org/ .com.au. They have been amazing because, you know, I'm like quite a busy solo kind of full-time freelance artist, so they've been able to kind of manage the applications to Yirrumboy and, you know, a couple of other grants that we're trying to get to fund what we're doing. So yeah, just it's a massive team effort with so many people involved, Marissa as well from the Binnenberg team, and yeah, and to all of our elders, to the country, there's like quite a bit of input from Yorta Yorta community on the stories that are included. So if it wasn't for our elders continuing to hold those knowledges and to pass those down, then yeah, this wouldn't exist. So yeah, to my country, to my old people, and to the next generations who will continue our practice of storytelling.
For people who want to follow along or find out more information, where can they go? Where can they support and follow along?
The best place would be to keep an eye on the Yirrumboy website under the commissions section. We're one of four commissions and all of the artists in them are amazing and the projects look incredible. So keep an eye on that. But also, yeah, you can keep an eye on the Binnenberg website, my website, alara.co, ALLARA.co. Yeah, or just my Facebook, my artist Facebook or Instagram, which is ALLARA_... Yeah, but look forward to connecting and, yeah, hearing how people respond and seeing how people feel when they hear the work. It's pretty moving, even for us as the creators, to get to hear our language and sing our language. So, yeah, we're looking forward to seeing how this lands.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on and chatting with us today.
Thank you. So I hope my rambling wasn't too intense.
That was Alara Briggs Patterson talking about the album Gan Banan for Yirrumboy 2027. I'm Nari Pakai. You're listening to NITV Radio.